To know and not to experience means to be the same. To experience and to share the feeling. Because we're all of us. There is no difference in your life when it comes to the breath. This little gadget here, absolutely useless if you unplug it from over here. But if they say every gear is wrong with a little switch over here, as long as it's plugged in, and as long as the company in this building is here, the electricity, you can use the other plug in. So that's the same way with ourselves. We have a great problem in our intellect. We have a unique system of dependency of breath. All kinds of games you can play the intellect. But they're totally dependent on breath. And breath doesn't care if you're a man, woman, smart, or a country. It's not poor. It's not a country. It's available. Play the system available. Two obvious, two simple, very difficult aspects. Because it doesn't seem to confine the theology. It provides equality. And that's contradiction. Especially when it's motivated to improve on the time. Nothing. If you aren't motivated to improve, it would be a misery. But it could be worse. Better to be motivated to improve than to remain in a stagnant state in this life and never go nowhere. Or to never have a chance to try. So, for that reason, this creative process is beautiful. The drug cannot be required to realize it. Sister once told him, Adano, when you know God, all your good and lousy decisions will be fulfilled. So you know, you have lived from good and lousy decisions, right? And they were all fulfilled so far. And as long as you breathe, you'll have the opportunity to do what? Make good and lousy decisions. But you have no sins to pay for, right? What sin is there to pay? If you look back and think it's a sin, you'll see that's an ugly decision. And if there's not to pay for, it's a good decision. So it's very happy life you got, but you don't know how to use it. But once you understand it, not miracles, say why the miracle didn't really find it more. Yes, it was a belief. But picture for one moment walking down the cemetery and you say, hey, you there, come on out. By the power of God, I command you to walk out. And out from these fellows, ready to be tackled and not watch the IRS from their staff. Bill said, man, put me back in jail. It is not practical to raise the dead, right? Funny. I'm not glad to hear. Miracles aren't really impressive. But the joy of perseverance, right above the limitation, moment to moment, is the greatest miracle. That's a big for the year. To breathe moment to moment and not to fight. Because that's all the miracle is. Greater intelligence, free mind, breath of life, into the truth. We don't breathe. We are breathing into it. That's a fact. The baby doesn't breathe through his nostril in the womb. Every doctor knows that. Until the cord is cut, the air does not go into the nostril. After the cord is cut, if the nostril doesn't align itself to the air and it's consumed by the environmental pressure, we have to use machines to try to bring it to the alignment. And if the machines don't accomplish it, we tell the person, sorry. It's too difficult. So we know without doubt that we don't fool ourselves anymore. That to who we are versus what we are. What we are will never let you down. Who you are, the Lord is leading corruption. It's called cosmic bankruptcy. Because you have the who and the you to the who. Constantly going on every second of the but what you are is universal and very, very. We want something very magical, very dramatic, to tell us that. That's our difficulty. But if you appreciate the simplicity, you'll see the magic is already working for you, or the miracle is working for you. And the miracle is what we call the prepared surprise. So like my friend David said, surprise me. Now you know how to bring it up again? Let me ask you this question. If we all were lying on dead in this room, and God walks and says, hi folks, what do you want? You're pressed back to perform some miracles or some projectors to make you the richest person in the world? What do you ask for? What do you want then? There's that point. See how we got that? Well, we gotta love it. Because what good is the miracle to perform when the presenter to whom he can't breathe. It's still end on death. Yes, when you breathe, all the miracles are possible. And all the possessions are possible. Yet, I don't know many persons who own anything and it remains permanently with him, but it doesn't change. From the time you were growing up, are you wearing the same size dress or shoes? How to change the money, let alone many other things. There aren't any things that you can get into this part. A lot of things are coming out. And that's what's so beautiful about the breath and reviving the opportunity to enjoy every new month. Years ago, a friend of mine was getting out of a Cadillac. And there were several people waiting for him. And one man mentally said, if this fellow is so great and spiritual, how come he's driving in a Cadillac? He should be driving in an ordinary Q3. And the person turned around and looked at the group. They were never introduced. And he looked straight at the man and said, Mr. John. So it's totally thrown away because here is a big name is called, not to be exposed. He said, I didn't ask for this Cadillac. It was given to me as a present. In fact, it's a very poor expression of man's creativity, looking for a better model next year. Now, there was the latest model Cadillac 3 days old of the assembly line he's driving. So you can imagine his version of life. And that man's name was Yogananda. He lived in America, California. And on the day he went on a cosmic vacation, he left us his body to experiment with beautiful rock. It is rock. So that was his choice of staying for us on the earth plane. You can accept what you are or keep fooling yourself about who you are. So I'll say this, he helped me to pull my head out of the dark, to look at the little kitten that caught itself the devil, that was meowing all around me, and they're panting. Do we realize what we are? Interesting. What you are provides the opportunity to talk to itself in a human body and gives it every possible test in the form of sleep, memory, and forgetfulness. What you are is light called breath, known in all of your as God. Out of what is sitting in a throne, but a cosmic principle that has no start nor end. But this principle provides entertainment for its own self by making manifestation. That's why when you read the written document of how God made this universe, it always goes back to this statement. In first word in the document,
artist or John. Next one is the beginning. That's the start. And what was in the beginning? The word. What word? Today we know word is Sanskrit. All around us are Sanskrit of Sanskrit. There's nothing here but cosmic resonance. Cosmic Sanskrit. And the word was God, not spirit, he was back there. Resonance is here, totally enveloping everything and providing opportunity. What's the opportunity? And the word was made flesh. That resonance slowed down and became solid object called flesh. This is the slowest speed of creative resonance. It's such. And every day you look in the mirror, you see the big daddy in mommy. Lovely, the best thing I got. Misery that didn't happen. Now comes the question. And the word was made flesh. That means there isn't any object more unique or complete than this substance called flesh. But of all the forms in the universe, this word or resonance chose something to reside in as a whole. It shows man. You heard it? Can you see it? What you say is, but this is the joke. As it shows flesh to reside in, and giving flesh two forms to express itself as male and female, because sonic is already object, and there is nothing here in this universe but sound and light. Come, let us make man. Come, let us, not come, let me make man. And man doesn't necessarily mean just you alone. Man also means come, let sonic and optic make a manifestation. Since you can't see that, and you can't hear light, you're stuck in a manifestation of it. So, we are the manifestation of sonic and object in a material called flesh or tissue. But we who? Sonic and optic. Not Adana. Not Jane or Joe. Sonic and optic is locked up in a container called tissue. And it plays the role of male-female, meaning a positive charge and a negative charge. Positive charge dilates, and a negative charge constricts. So, between you and I, if you're the female aspect, you take the constricting cycle of the flesh. And if I'm the male, I take the dilating aspect of the flesh. So the Oriental people say the whole thing of the yin-yang. Yin and yang. What it means that pure stretches and constricts. There ain't going no place. That's the yang. Well, you're stuck in that particular level, and you've got to work your way out of it. Yin yang, here we are, every one of us, laying the road. Now look at yourself. This is called a man. great big thing, huh? And if I was to ask myself, what is man's body made of? You'll tell me a sperm and an ovum. Not two sperms, not two ovum. Why not? Why should it not be? Can be sperm. You got a sperm and one ovum. One is the great. But then what is mommy made of? What is my sister made of? Sperm, ovum. You mean no two sperm, no two ovum make my sister? No. And I am man. I am made of sperm, ovum. Yeah. Oh boy. Can you use the oversight, then? No, son, that's not possible. Everyone is a virgin word. Now you ask yourself, what the heck am I? Who put me together? As a sperm and an ovum, and I can't use the ovum twice, and I'm held together in a material called tissue, so what the hell am I here to do? Breathe, boy, breathe. So I have to breathe. And then on top of it, to make it more comical, go forth and multiply and have dominion over the universe. Let's have a full franchise. So here we go, horsing around, trying to make up with all kinds of games, but we can't know that now is not staying here because we got to sleep at night. And if we don't wake up, the game is over. But if we do understand what we are, we are free from this, who we are, because the who is moment-to-moment opportunity to involve yourself in time frame, to express what you're hearing as sonic or words, which you think you understand because you've been programmed to understand it, and can find yourself very handicapped if it's not the type of sonic you are familiar with. Now you're familiar with what I'm saying, and it means more to you as you hear it, right? Now if you understand this. Anybody here understand Japanese? What they have a Japanese question, they have to say, what? More human, yes. More human, yes. More human, yes. Now you understand French. So here we are locked in the Tower of Babylon, you know, big fat mouth, trying to explain what the heck we are to ourselves. Got it? But as long as you think you are programmed to English and you understand English, it means a lot what I am saying to you. And that becomes a misery when it is not a language. So here we are caught up in the who instead of the what. And the what is the same sonic talking back to itself in the form of a man or a woman and is trying to establish a sense of functional behavior of loving one another. As our brother Jesus said, I'm going to give you the toughest commandment in the world. You think you have 10 commandments from Moses? Wait till you hear this one. Love you one another. But first, love God with all of your mind. Now that's a test of a deal. How can you love God with all of your mind if you fall asleep at night? You broke your love. And if you don't wake up, you deserve to be left in the grave. Rotten deal, eh? But if you do wake up and don't fall asleep, well, because that's what he told his disciples, hey, you guys, you're sleeping. You can't stay awake a little while with me and pray, or keep it tuned. And the guard gets coming, so you can see something of value. And those who were awake and kept watch, they saw not only Jesus, but they saw two other beings that lived before Jesus, Moses and Elijah. But the people who were watching were not sleeping. those that were seated couldn't see what they were watching. So there is this whole effort. What goes on around you when you're sound asleep at night will be much more interesting than when you are sound asleep. So if you want to catch brothers and sisters of a higher level of awareness, you gotta be vigilant. And that's what the love is, with all of your mind. Loving the Lord thy God with all of your mind. Then from with all your heart. That's the pumping of blood and body. And with all of your strength, that's the breath. No breathing, no strength. And with all of your souls, well, I don't have a soul because it's preposterous to ask my body to save it. But if I am soul, then it may save my body for the ignorance. And that is ignoring what I actually am instead of who I think I am. But since I don't have soul, I must be something much more greater than soul. What am I? When we break this whole pattern down to its innermost core, we find it's 144 elements. In the solid form, it's called dust or soil. And then it's put together and function, it's called tissue or man, male or female. But it can't move around if it don't breathe. And the moment it breathes, it's called living body. Actually, it's living soil, not living dirt. But if you don't want to accept it as living soil or living dirt, ask Brother Moses, and he really confronted that principle. He was told to take his dirty shoes off. He's standing on the supreme soil now. Remember that story? Remove your shoes, because y'all are standing on holy ground. The wholeness of the soil is embedded and incorporated in creative life, which you, Moses, as an individual representation of me, now are acting within this framework of love. So get down on your knees and look at yourself and accept yourself as the holy God there is. And you can go tell my brothers and sisters down in that land, you better pull the head out of the ground. And if you ask who sent it, tell them, I am sent it. But you know, Moses couldn't just tell those people that. Who the hell is going to believe that I am sent it? I am sent it? Tell us to quit working for these jerks over here? No, man. Okay. He knew that he couldn't convince them by telling them I am, because they're ready to take I am as to what they are. They're going to look for some other name for who they are. And you have to find a name to convince them to get up to do something for themselves. And he gave them a name. And the name was Jehovah. So then he walked down the mountain and encouraged his brothers and sisters to pick up their consciousness and live. The first thing they questioned, who sent you? And he said, Jehovah. And if Jehovah said, you show us some of his powers. Okay. So the staff, dumb people, snakes, go up, come and cross the rivers. Let's get on with the ball of living, what we are. Right up to this moment in time, we're still battling with the conflict inside. Who am I or what am I? If you accept what you are, and that your mouth has the capacity to control the atom in order for you to have its experience, you'll see it every day when you say something and it happens and you wonder why it happens. as if that happened to you? Make statements and they happen all of a sudden. But that's very minor. Compare this now to if you actually spend time becoming conscious of this ability that you, the being, is endowed with the power to modulate the atom by spoken word, via your voice. Now if you're in doubt, then you have references of all the previous beings who did it. And even then you are told by one of the greatest of them, you have every right to use it. And so Brother Jesus would say, if you say to the mountain, move, it'll move, providing you got faith the size of a mustard seed. Mustard seed isn't big. Think how much faith or conviction you have to move that mountain. It would be alright years ago to move the mountain by speaking the spoken word. God, we didn't have a big population on the planet then. Today, if you move too many mountains, you got earthquakes and you got misery. So it's not practical to move mountains anymore without a spoken word. But maybe practical to move our mental fixation and the mountains of mental fixation that limit us as expressions of God. So what you say to yourself and what you think you about yourself, that's all the limitations of you. And the first thing you should be removing from yourself is the limitation of your health. Because God is pure health. Not something you find in store, but a principle flowing within you to allow you to experience what you are. And the greatest contribution you can make to it is to align your ability to speak to yourself, to be mind to yourself. It is your freedom and it is your right. But you also entitled to be sick, to display your freedom and your right. No one here will prevent you from telling yourself you're poor and broke and you're sick and miserable. Let alone encourage you to think you have all the capabilities of rising above you. So that is inherently what you are. A being endowed with an opportunity to speak to itself, the utmost in life. And the utmost in life is freedom. These men are male and female, Lord and his brother. Everyone around here is a brother, a sister. And the common thing about all of us is that we breathe here. It's pushed into us. Who would like to be the most enlightened intellectual human being? Very rich, but don't believe. Who would like to be the most enlightened intellectual human being? Very rich, but don't breathe. Nobody wants to be that. Who would like to be a triple dumb dog and breathe all the time? That's why we were told to be like children in the process of self-understanding, and that is what is unique. Because That doesn't take away your responsibility to your environment as an adult, no. Paul was inferring that when he said, when I'm a child, I think of a child, now I'm a man, I think of a man, no. He's inferring that when you understand what you are, you never lose the ability to be childlike anymore. Because, like the big joke that we were sitting on a big ball rolling down the road. You ever see kids sit on a ball and time to throw things go down the road? Well, that's what life would be to you if you understand it from that level of self-acceptance. So health is first. Then the next thing about health is everyone feels they don't have the money to pay for their bills, right? And they always feel threatened with their bills. Well, let me put it this way. There are only two ways to exist in this world. When you're a child, you exist with this something for nothing attitude. Mama and Papa is provided as long as I don't do anything wrong. It's called ATG. You get attention getting syndrome. But as soon as you grow up, then the world tells you, hey fella, this is something for something worth. You ain't going to get something for nothing, so don't fool yourself too long. Enjoy your childhood days, and as soon as you mature up, it's something for something. So the Eastern man calls it karma, Western man calls it cause-effect, and Jesus calls it plain old with passion fun. What you plant, you get. You plant tomatoes, you can get tomatoes. You don't get corn. But if you do get corn and you plant tomatoes, that's a miracle. And when you plant the corn and you get a squash, you're the buying now because you never get anything back to eat. So there is a problem there as you grow up to see there is no something for nothing to be practical. It's something for something. And you're going to love it. You know why you're going to love it? Because you can rely on it. And if you can't rely on it, you're going to hate it. The first time when it surprises you, that's the miracle. The second time when it doesn't come true, it's a misery. So you see why 99% of the time you have to live in repetition. And 1% of the time you have to live with new models, inspiration. So what you are makes you accept very fast the creative principles locked up in you, providing the opportunity to interact via the spoken word. There is no greater opportunity than to interact with resonance and optics in a crystallized form called manifestation than to self-talk. Years ago, someone said to me, he's a very great brother, he wrote a wonderful book. The book is called Let Go, Let God. And he said to me, Adamo, it's all right to talk to yourself, but don't do it in public. Because you'll put you in a pretty house. Now, if you do it in a monastery, they call it prayer and teaching. If you do it in a bus, in the public, you're not dead, they call the cops and the police, which will put you in. But you're entitled to talk to yourself, though. That's the funny thing about it. But you got to know where to talk to yourself without creating a problem. And Brother Jesus says, if you want to talk to yourself, go in your innermost chamber. Well, I know the innermost chamber can be called a boat. Nobody's going to interfere with that for me because I already can talk to myself then. So whatever I have to say to myself, if I don't like it,
I'll be satisfied that I'm saying it to myself. And I can look in the mirror and appreciate the opportunity too. So I'm not afraid to see that in my mechanism lies the potential to rise above my own limitations by my own inspiration, just as much I can limit myself in my own mouth. But if I rely on the fact of what I am and not who I am, then I don't panic or become ridiculous. So when it comes to paying bills, I knew a wonderful person. He owned the Pacific Railway years ago in Canada, and I met him. And my first question was, tell me, John, how do one become a millionaire? And he said, Adam, there is no mystery to that. Poor men, rich men, all have bills to pay. But there are only three ways to pay it. And I said, oh, let me know. He said, half the time with the most anger, because I'll already do the next day. I'm not half your bills. So no one wants to pay bills like that. Or on time and nothing left over, you made by the skin of your nose. Or 2% off in 10 days and you can bargain with the other guy and bring the bills up. So I said to him, thank you for the understanding, but could I add a little twist to that? And he said, yes. Could I pay my bills ahead? To come to stay and come to share? He said, boy, that's the best way to do it. And with that attitude, you can prove it to yourself. If ever you are going to feel that you can't meet your obligation in this world set up by the prison intelligence, you tell him, and you have my permission to tell him, hey daddy, you don't work for nobody. What the hell I gotta work for somebody? You punching customers? Let me do something that I can punch the customers and take care of my bills, eh? Or you can shove this universe and keep it. I'll lie down here and forget it. You know what you can tell me? My dear boy or girl, I provide you bread and I don't want to lose you. You can be abused till midnight eternity as my child. So here, have all the money you need to take care of your obligation. Because that's how it has to work. But to put yourself in what Jesus called the poor of mind, we rebuke the Lord Peter by saying, you always have the poor in you, but me, never. The poor in mind will always be with mankind because you'll always create the faith of self. The real you of what you are could bypass you and you never know it because you're going to fall asleep. And you're going to forget who you are. And if you don't wake up, you have your character gone. But as long as you're awake and accept what you are, you have the right to exercise that power within your frame of life, your needs, to satisfy what you need to be. So there is pulling yourself out from the sickness, to poverty, then to the relationship. That's what the hardest thing to do in this world, to relate to the poverty. Because if you don't love yourself first, you can't relate to others. They may try to mold you or you may try to mold them. And I don't want to sound crude, but you know what makes two people aggravate each other every day? Is when they go in and say, why did you leave the seat down? And then the other says, why didn't you pick it up? Sound familiar? That's the biggest aggravation going in our society. So relationships can be destroyed very fast with that little piece of wood on top of solid bones.
the Swami 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 Maharaj did too many people destroy their marriages just for the public people. He's trying to help them, but they're already fixated and they've gone to the point of no return. But a relationship is compassionate. If we are compassionate and we... So anytime we find we're in a bind to relate, creative intelligence always provides inspiration. So if somebody comes with a mechanical toilet seat, from the time you sit down or talk to you back, like those cars, I think we'll have a lot more happy marriages going on. Any other questions? Yes. You never really question what you are.
To do something about your sickness or fixation, you don't search into what you are. That's why we have to go through the agony of mucking up, overdoing for the first 30 years of our life, and then to make a transformation of going from who we are to what we are. As soon as this begins, you discover very fast that what you are is very simple to operate. It operates from what you say to yourself. Whatever you say to yourself, that particular statement has to be lived. And this is why Brother Jesus said, "He that doeth the will of the Lord is my brother and my sister and my mother. And he that followeth in my word is my disciple." But the disciple is not above his master, nor the master above the disciple. It is enough that they be friends. In simple language, what you are is the test of your ability to live what you say every moment. Who you are, you can get away of not living or acting what you say. But what you are will not allow you to do that. In the West, there used to be a code. I don't know if you ever heard of it. The code of the West. Anybody know what it is?
Man's word.
Man's word. Man's word. Good. In other words, you're as good as your word. And that was the code of the West. It's still the highest code there is as far as what you are versus who you are. Whatever you say with a spoken voice, and you live that experience, it will stand the test. And the test that it will stand is this mechanism, if it has to go on vacation, since there is no such thing as death. It can do one of three things. One, it can leave us the mechanism to experiment to see why it doesn't rot. Or it can take it with itself and we wonder where the hell you've gone if you have never were here before. We have no evidence you ever was here, but you're gone on your vacation. And the third condition is you have the option to drop in and out, but you don't come through the door, you walk through the wall to visit your friends and ask them for something to eat, and touch it and leave it so it doesn't rot. Then they will know you know what you are. These are all
actual fact waiting for each one of us. It has already been demonstrated by our brothers who have achieved it, and our sisters, and it's getting more and more recognized every day at all levels of consciousness, what you are versus who you are. And therefore, Brother Jesus would say, "He that doeth the will of the Lord is my brother and my sister. And he that followeth in my word is my disciple." But the word is that you live it. Follow it means to live it, act it. Act what you say. Now, to him that overcometh, I will not send forth a second time, but I'll make him a pillar in the house of the Lord. Overcome what? When you overcome the notion of not acting what you say, you will not be free. But when you overcome by acting what you say to yourself, you will be free. And you will be a permanent fixture in this atomic universe. Because atoms are held together by sonics and optics. And the core of an atom is optics in a force field of sonics. And you and I are only a manifestation of this principle. Yet you and I are endowed with this tremendous gift to talk to ourselves via the mouth and state in whatever language you want to state it, to experience it. So, from that standpoint, you have the greatest gift in you. Power to act what you say to yourself. And don't look for the magic. Look for the actual accomplishment of what the atoms will do if you live it. The actual accomplishment would be exactly a non-decomposing mechanism as evidence, or to take it with you and not leave it around, or come back and visit your friends in a way that they can't explain why you don't come through the door, and give them enough tangible experience that you're not a figment of their imagination either, and have lunch with them, and if they're ever going to doubt that the food that you get is not valid, you have the empty plate, and the objects that you touch can be held in a state of non-refrigeration to defy decomposition. So two things equal to the same thing are themselves equal to one another. You and the creative principle locked up in you as sonics, and God, the creative principle that became us, form as sonics, are one and the same. So there is no such thing as not experiencing what you are. You'll be constantly confronting what you are as you live the spoken word. That doesn't deprive you from going to church either. But churchianity is not Christianity, and spirituality is not churchianity either. Christianity is the art of living, and spirituality is being practical with it. But churchianity can be very fanatical. So don't compare the two. church is a place to go and respect. But you have to make your mechanism the living church, the living temple of the living word. Because you have to speak it and you have to experience it in this mechanism. And that's what you are. The beautiful part of what you are is there is no commandment, thou shalt not lie. But there is commandment, thou shalt not bear false witness against your neighbor. So don't judge or make statements about another loved one that you don't want to relate with. They're entitled to their misery or their frustration by mucking up, just as much as you're entitled to yours. But you have the right to talk to yourself. And this whole environment that you see around here is a big lie in the first place. It's held together in such a fantastic way that when you break it down by scientific equipment, it blows away all your illusions about what you think you are and who you are. What would you call this object? What's it made from? Paper, right? We all agree? Now, what is paper made from?
Huh?
A tree. Now, where do trees come from? A seed, right? What is a seed made of? Minerals. Right? What are minerals made of? Atoms. Oh, atoms. What are atoms made of? Good. What is Sarex made of now? Envelope? See where we are? This is a good illusion of the sonics in a tangible way to fool the five senses. And yet the intellect doesn't accept it when it takes it through every form of dissection to its core. It comes back to the internalness of now called energy, spirit, principle, idea. But we function in two densities of it, a density that we can trust. I trust this density of the atom that I can walk with it and I don't take it to it like a fuel. But if I spend my time researching it, I'll discover that the density will change and become a fume. Then I have the option to walk through the fume and be invisible, or to stay in the density and be visible. We know that there are objects in this room that we can't see. They're invisible. But at the same time, they can be measured and photographed with certain type of equipment. And that doesn't say they don't exist. They exist. But they operate in two fields of light and density. So right in this room, if your eyes have the power to see, Brother Jesus is standing looking at you. And if your eyes can't see, that's just too bad. God, he told you already. Those that have eyes to see, let them see. And those that have eyes to hear, let them hear. And if you can't, turn it up. Don't blame him. You have all the right to turn it up, to see him in the invisible range. And he has every right to make himself solid enough for you to touch him. But this is the right of each individual. He allows allowing yourself to be touched, and you're allowing yourself to see it. So this is our option. And he wouldn't deny us, and we wouldn't deny ourselves if we look at what we are. We can turn up our vision to see into the density of the mass that is invisible. Or that being can slow down his density to be solid enough to convince you that he's not a figment of your imagination. Now, I'm not talking of something that he didn't do. I'm talking of something that he has done many times, which tells us right away, we are the only ones that are fooling ourselves, not him. We are fooling ourselves to believe who we are instead of what we are. He is living what he is, the creative principle in flesh. We have that same principle locked up in us if we accept it. And to accept it is to live what we see. Now, it could be worse. It's tough to live what you say. I know it's very tough to live what you say. Sometimes you don't want to live it. But it could be worse never to have the opportunity to try to live, to see something. So there we have to consider which is more important, to have the opportunity to live, to see, and act what you see, or never to have the opportunity to live at all. So by virtue of this, we are indeed fortunate to look at ourselves and confront ourselves that what we are is far more important than who we are. Because the unlimitedness of what you are far transcends the limitedness of who you are. Think of that. What you are is unlimited. Who you are is limited. Every night you go to bed, fall asleep, you know pretty fast you're limited as to who you are. And if you find out while you're in that state what you are, it's unlimited. Any other questions? My answer is yes, no, maybe. Yes, such a thing does exist in a certain time frame to satisfy certain fixations of the human brain. No, it don't exist in another time frame because that's a limitation as to what you are internally structured by the atomic mass. And maybe we need the exposure to learn the comparison of fooling ourselves in order not to fool ourselves no more. So if we fool ourselves first to believe it does exist the way it is said to exist, and then discover that it isn't actually all that it is about it, we would free ourselves to really claim our true nature of what we are. But we must have the experience to make the mistake to compare and emerge out of it. But to literally accept or reject is not valid. We need all three. So it is valid to say that such a condition can exist within a certain time frame to fit certain fixations of the human mind. And it's not valid because other things will show up that you know, it actually worked out. But then the comparison pattern will give the real truth between a who and a what. And the what will triumph over the who. In the end, the what will triumph. I'll give an example. There was a great king who had a great teacher. And the teacher went on vacation. And the king decided to go check out a channeler or a transmedium. In those days, they used to call them witches. And when this transmedium called up the king's teacher, rebuked the channeler and rebuked the student by exposing him to the channeler. Now the student is a king. He disguised himself and he didn't want the channeler to recognize him, but he wanted the channeler to tap in on the invisible realm to expose what the teacher was doing or to contact the teacher. And here comes the teacher chastising both of them and exposing the student. The student's name was King Saul. And the story is called The Witch of Endor. And his teacher, his name was Samuel. Now, that was left unsaid after, because the channeler rebuked the discovery of the king coming to her in such a way that she felt totally destroyed. But at the same time, the king had to go back now and look into his own consciousness and find out, did he work to find out what he was, or was he still laboring under who he was? And he never went searching for his teacher under those circumstances anymore. If that was all there is, we would never have the next level to recall. And it's the next level that we see only in Jesus' time. Jesus went to the garden with his disciples to pray a while. And he asked them to pray. That means be conscious. Keep your mind awake. Don't fall asleep. And gradually, three of his disciples saw a strange phenomenon occurring right in the garden. They saw two other beings standing right next to Jesus. Now Jesus wasn't playing no transmedium. He stood up there, and along these two other beings appeared that they could be seen and recognized. And the two other beings that were seen and recognized were Elijah and Moses. And his own students that weren't sleeping recognized these beings. And they vowed that they will build a tabernacle to the experience. So they had what is called a visible manifestation of another dimension of the atomic physics that can superimpose itself to remove the illness in their memory banks about who they think they are or what they think they are. If ever they were cured, that moment, you are totally cured. So if we are looking for some kind of a liberation from our own internal fixations that make us unhealthy, I don't say that the Witch of Endor technique or the transmedium technique doesn't have a place, but I prefer the transfiguration. That is a far more practical identification with the reality of what I am. So we go one step further from that now. The teacher had to go through death by being nailed to a cross, leaving his own students in a dilemma, never to be seen again. They would automatically feel dejected or rejected and totally desolated. Now, if the teacher is going to use a transmedium method to contact his own students, then he hasn't really discovered what he is. And if he did perform the opportunity of allowing his students to see the other two beings from another dimension and helping them to heal their own consciousness, and then exposed to death, and having his own students go into a state of mental quandary, we're going to find out if this teacher has really achieved unity with life instead of making statements about it. And it's when the students are in a quandary as to where the teacher is, the teacher comes through the wall, not the door. He doesn't even knock at the door to be let in. He comes through the wall, and the first remark his most sophisticated student says, "Oh no, you're an apparition. You're a figment of my imagination. You're a zombie or a zombie or something." And the teacher says, "Oh no, come check, man. Make sure that this is valid. This is not no figment of imagination. This is no channeling. This is the tangible, real stuff you're going to work with. Check this room. Make sure. And you got any food here to eat? I'll eat with you." And then he left via the wall. Today, science tells you that wall is not solid. It's all atoms. But if you don't know what you are, you're going to bump it with and bleed your nose. But if you know what you are, you'll walk through it and come back out and leave them puzzled, or push your hand through it and take it out back. Knowing what you are is different than knowing who you are. Knowing who you are, you'll hit the wall and break your fingers. Now, years ago, there was a young man who told Yogananda that he had arrived at this state and knew what, who and what was. And Yogananda said, "You sure you're not still living with the who instead of the what?" He said, "No, I think I know the difference." So he said, "All right, prove it to me." And he saw a car coming down the road, and he said to Yogananda, "I can step in front of the car and show that I and the car are one." And Yogananda said, "All right, give me a demonstration." And he put his mind into his, what he thought was the atomic identity. And if the teacher wasn't standing near to him, they'd bury him. And he was lucky that the guy who was driving had good brakes, because he wasn't what he was. He was only who he was. But then, later on, the teacher gave him an illustration of what he was versus who he was. They're driving to visit him, the man, his wife, and his brother. And they're coming over a bridge. And the bridge is very narrow, and they're in a car. At the other end of the bridge is an 18-wheeler truck that can only allow a truck to go over one at a time, and there's no room for the car. Then it's too late to turn back or pull up the brakes. Either way, they're already under a bridge. And right there and then, he said, "Oh, teacher, I had it, I goofed." The moment he uttered the words, he felt a huge hand, so big like the wind, hold the car and move it at an angle and allow the 80-wheeler to pass, and he's on the other side of the bridge. Now, he never said a single thing when he arrived in California to see the teacher. He kept it to himself because he was so embarrassed. But the teacher is coming out of the garden by a lake, and he looks up and sees the young man, and he said to him, "Next time when you're driving in a car, you face an 80-wheeler, be a little more slower." But you made it. Now you know what you are versus who you are. And that was the, from that moment, that man lived at the teacher's place and became one of his most devoted students. But he never boasted anymore as to who or what, because he had the actual experience of what. Now, I met him before he went on vacation, in order to teach me certain things I needed to know about what I am. And the last week before he went on vacation, I was supposed to meet him on a Sunday. On the Wednesday, I said to my friend in the motel, I got a hunch things aren't working out right with this person. He said, oh, you and your suspicions and your intuition, you. So I let it go, but in my mind, something is telling me, no, you're not going to see him this weekend. When the Sunday came, the night before, which is the Saturday, we set the clock to go to the chapel where he lectures on a Sunday. At the right time, we got to get up to go down the road. And that would be the chapel opens at 11 for the public to give the lecture, and we're setting it to get up to go. So, we went to bed that night, and we woke up, the alarm never went off. The clock is stopped. And we know we're late. We got in the car, and we're heading down the road. And we got every red light hitting us on time till we get to the chapel. So you know you're late. Because you can't run the red lights in California, they give you a ticket very fast. Unless the Lord, somebody wants to walk across the road in front of you, you got to give them the right way. Every red light was there late. But we arrive, and I'm walking up to the spot where he's supposed to lecture. There are two people ahead of us. And then there's a downstairs, and I'm running to the upstairs section to where you could be seen, to where he's doing the lecture. And as soon as I got to the gate, the girl says, sorry, sir, these are the last two. There are no more seats, you have to go downstairs. By that time, I'm laughing to myself, and my buddy says, man, what kind of craziness is this? I said, I'm getting the message, but you don't get it. We go downstairs, and we have to listen to the public address system. And on the public address system, when the time comes for this person to get up and lecture, here comes the message. Dear ladies and gentlemen, we're sorry to announce that Dr. Lewis is no longer with us. He went into a spiritual exit on Wednesday afternoon, 2 o'clock. But we will have a memorial meditation today for him. I realized I couldn't see the man, so when it was all over, I got out. But something told me I must see his wife for a final confirmation of what I wanted to know. There was no way to get to where she was, and I didn't see her in the chapel, so I ran around the building, and something told me, no, don't go behind this, go around the other end of the alley and come up the building, which was a little longer, but I didn't. And to my amazement, she was just coming out of a doorway, out of the kitchen of the building, and we bumped into each other. She said, Atano! And I said, look. She said, I got a message for you. I said, oh, tell me, how did the doctor leave the body? She said, it's very simple, and the message is for you. And I said, oh, he was in the hospital to have his annual checkup, and he gave me the notes to give to you. And he sent his daughter downstairs to get the newspaper. And while she was downstairs, he turned to her and said, I'm going to sit down and meditate. And so he got up out of the bed. He wasn't a sick man. He was in there for a medical checkup and his annual checkup. And he sat down on the floor in lotus position to meditate with her. And out of the wall, she said, straight in front, stepped out Yogteswar, his teacher of Yogananda, and said to him, "Doctor, are you ready?" And he looked up and he said, "Yes." And Yogteswar stretched his hand up, and Dr. Lewis got up, and they both turned around and looked at the wife. And he said to his wife, "Bye, honey, I'm going on vacation," and went away into the wall. Now she's left with a body sitting in a lotus position. How is she going to explain to her doctor that he walked through the wall? He weighs 230 pounds. And I know how small a woman she is. She can try and lift him up and put him in the bed. She said, "Adaro, it blew my mind. When I lifted the body, put it in the bed, to cover it in the bed, she had to go call the nurse to tell her husband that he left him." She said, "He felt as light as a pillow. The whole 200-some-odd pounds felt as light." She lifted, put it in the bed, wrapped it over with the bed sheet and the blanket, went outside and called the nurse. The nurse came in, the doctor said, "He had a heart attack." That's all they could see. And they wrote up the death certificate. Now, this is a funny joke. The message to me is, "I'll see you in a week from now." So she says, "This is the message he left for you." I said, "Okay, thank you." And I went away. A week passed, I'm in my motel. And at 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm lying on my bed, and the next bed is my friend, he's doing his work. He's sound asleep, and I'm forced to wake up to meditate. And I'm waking up, and I'm seeing somebody just standing at the door. There's only one door, there's no window, just like that door there. And I'm sitting there, and I'm saying, "Am I crazy or nuts? Am I seeing it all kind of imaginable?" And then the person comes through the door, and I look, and I recognize who it is, and he says, "Hi." I said, "Hi, Doc." He said, "Are you ready for your final training?" I say, "I guess so. I'm going to argue." "You want to know what you want?" I say, "Yeah, I guess so." "Okay, here goes." And he taught me certain breathing techniques for my actual self. And then he said, "I'll see you tomorrow." All night I'm glowing like a firewall. I can't sleep. I'm glowing and trying to understand the atomic processes. Next morning, my buddy wakes up. He says, "Hey, man, I had a strange dream last night." I said, "Oh, what kind of dream?" He said, "You know that doctor guy, that pastor?" I said, "Yeah." "I had a dream that he came in here and he was talking to me, but I didn't know what the hell he was talking. He was talking some crazy language." So that's a hell of a dream. Keep my mouth shut, because if I said something had happened, it'll freak him out. But I let it go on, said nothing. He came back the next day, the same time, and taught me some more. And my buddy is sound asleep snoring. And when it's all over this morning, my buddy wakes up and tells me the same dream he's having. This is 2 days in a row, you know. By that time I'm trying to wind up my training. And then he tells me, "I'll see you again one more day." And he shows up again one more time. Now, by that time I know I'm not fooling myself, because I can touch and feel flesh and blood. There's not my imagination. So the third day, my buddy, he said, "Man, this is too strange. 3 days in a row, the same dream. That don't make sense." He said, "There's got to be something going on." I said, "Well, I don't know." He said, "But you're looking different." I said, "What do you mean, looking different?" He said, "You know," he said, "there's a glow I don't know what I used to see before different." I said, "Oh." "All right. and we had to come back to Texas. On the way back to Texas, the rain is falling like crazy. And he said to me, he says, you know my history, you know my heritage. I said, yeah. Would you tell me what you see in front of you in the car on the road? And I'm looking down, I said, yeah, I can tell you, but you want to accept it? I said, yeah. He said, okay. You're looking at Jesus, you're looking at Elijah, and you're looking at Moses standing in the middle of the road, right or wrong. He said, you bet they are. He said, I'm not Jewish. He said, I got records to prove I'm from the descendants of the house of David. And he said, I know those faces very well. And there ain't no imagination of my grave. He said, well, what are they doing in the middle of the road? I said, they're giving you evidence of your awareness to what you are, that you are not some being just going around in your imagination. They are not no figment of your imagination as a spirit. They are actually in the atomic body of the highest quality possible that a human frame can achieve. He said, does that make more sense to me than anything I've learned as a going to school as a rabbi growing up? He said, those facts make more sense. So we drove on and down the road, and when we got close to where the farms were, the car wouldn't move. And the rain is falling like crazy. At that time, my buddy is repeating his Hebrew mantras. And loud like crazy. I knew him very well. We grew up together. When he went into his Jewish mantras, he was like a rabbi going through the process. And I could see his whole body transfiguring with the energy field. And then when he finished, he said to me, he says, I now understand what you mean, but what is more important than who? And the rain had stopped by then, and we started driving home to Texas. So what is involved with the actual atoms and can save the life of an individual in an emergency? But the who isn't. The who is built up in a lot of superstition or possible beliefs that don't actually occur. And you have to sort it out. And so we are not here to condemn individuals who have different experiences, but we are here to sort out which are practical in terms of knowing what the atomic mechanism is and what you are.
So, where did the experience happen?
What?
Where did that experience happen?
In the United States of America.
Can you tell us exactly where?
Yes. Mississippi.
Mississippi.
And that was on the road to Mississippi. And the experience with the doctor was in California. But I've met other beings here in America, and I'm not talking of Orientals. There are enough Americans, and they are living here in America, who have achieved that state. They don't go and boast to nobody. That's not their purpose. But they have demonstrated the authenticity of the truth of what they are. And they live a very wonderful spiritual life. And they have their diploma behind their name. Their degree is called SMS. Now, when you graduate, that's what you get from the school of what you are. Now, SMS stands for Saint Millionaire Student. they are a saint in the sense that they know what they are. They're a millionaire because they don't work for nobody, and they're a constant student in educating others to know themselves. So, but, yeah.
Does it take a spiritual teacher to show you what you are? Must it be transferred in that manner?
Yes, no, maybe. And I'll tell you why. At a certain level of consciousness, you wouldn't know the difference of who and what, because it would not come up as a sort of separating in your consciousness as a means to learn about it. Therefore, the who of you would be predominant in terms of your anguish of feeling inadequate. And therefore, the programming that guilt is necessary to encourage you to change your life, you will need a teacher, or think you have need of a teacher, to help you straighten out your thinking and be free from your guilt. And the compassionate nature of the teacher would give you the strength to handle your shortcomings by saying, through my grace, you, the student, can go on. And the student will feel the strength and the inspiration to continue. That's valid. That's a yes. No. In terms that each one is a child of the creative consciousness, and the creative consciousness is already embodied in you as life, understanding is the only teacher. Ignorance is the only devil. So, once you gain understanding, you defeat the devil in you, and you become master of yourself. Free man or woman, lord of yourselves. You are capable of looking into your structure and understanding how it's put together, and erasing the ignorance of who you think you are, and accepting the facts of what you are. And in that process of understanding, you transcend the limitations of your ignorance. Now, ignorance is not sin. Ignorance is simple. Important, because people tell you have to be important, you will continue in that ignorance. But if you feel that it's insufficient and that you don't have to be a victim of those ideas, you gain the understanding and throw out ignorance. And that's what Jesus did when he went in the 40 days and 40 nights in the desert to struggle with the understanding of his nature versus the ignorance of his nature. First test he had was food. Fasting, and ignorance is telling him, why are you fasting? Why are you ignoring food? Food is very important. Now, understanding must have a better answer to override the ridicule and the threat of ignorance. And it's the understanding that gives the right answer to conquer ignorance that we have. And this was the understanding. Man does not live by bread alone. This manifestation, male or female, is not existing by utilizing bread, a label for energy, in an indirect form through the mouth alone. It doesn't exist by that alone. If you don't breathe, you have it. So if you're depending on eating, that's what the baloney. But by every word, that's just resonance, which comes in the breath, that is passing through the mouth of God, which is the medulla oblongata, where the sperm and ovum bonded to form the human mechanism. that point is constantly resonating and integrating with the elements to move them on time. And every doctor knows if you stick it to the pin, the human being will be dead instantly. If you stick it to the feather, they're paralyzed for life. But they can operate in any other part of the anatomy and not be dangerous to it. But that one spot, they can't do anything. That was referred to in ancient agricultural language as the mouth of God. Today we know that the mouth of God is the actual hypothalamus located in the medulla oblongata of the human mechanism. And that's the actual spot where the sperm and ovum bonded to make this body into a form. Now, ignorance is conquered by understanding that this mechanism is not existing by eating. It's existing by intra-electromagnetic frequencies called sonics. The next test of ignorance is if you throw yourself off this mountain, your Father in heaven, which is life, will give you a chance and will send other beings to catch you lest you hurt yourself. Understanding will come back and says, no, we don't have the right to throw ourselves off the mountain because we don't make life. And so it'd be stupid to say, if I commit suicide, God has every right to save me from dying. He doesn't have to, because we don't make life and we should not take it unnecessarily by saying we're going to commit suicide. So understanding conquers ignorance by recognizing that life is given to the mechanism via the breath entering and not the mechanism grasping out of breath out of the ear and taking it in on its own. Physics proved that. When you cut the cord, the air goes through the nostril and it dilates and you breathe. It doesn't go in when you're in the womb. So that automatically tells us we don't have a right as an organism. And if we allow ignorance to enforce its conditions upon us and our logic and reason, our understanding, we'll be a victim. Now the third test is, if you bow down and worship me, I give you all these wonderful objects in the world. Well, you know, rich man, poor man, they all sleep every night. And which one can own any object if they don't wake up? That again is understanding mastering ignorance. You cannot own a single thing in this universe because you are subject to sleep. You're subject to unconsciousness. What can you really own? A blow in the head and you lose your consciousness. Can you own anything? And if they want to operate on you and give you some Novocaine or give you some ether and you're unconscious, how much can you own? So you see, you're vulnerable on the unconscious level. And therefore, the answer of understanding over ignorance is, get thee behind me, Satan, or get thee behind me, desire with attachment. A desire is normal, but with attachment is not normal. You have every right to crave things, but you don't have a right to be attached to them because there's nothing you can be attached to. The evidence that you become unconscious is the ignoring principle that makes you vulnerable. So what can you really be attached to? And that's what all the religions are based on. Buddhism is based upon that. Christianity, Islam, all of them is based on the attachment. Break free from it. Alright, he walks out of the mountain and comes down to live in the world with people. So he's not going to run away from the world and abstain. He's going to involve himself in the world by understanding. So understanding is a freedom that allows us to transcend ignorance and live what we are. Paul, in his own discovery, made the same statement. We call that the fruit of the Spirit, understanding. Versus the miracle or the something for nothing attitude as gifts of spirit. We can all have gifts of spirit where we can exercise some wonderful capability to overcome some limitation. But sooner or later we run out of the need for it, because why? We are not understanding why we're doing it and what is it we are trying to accomplish. How many dead people can you live before it becomes impractical? How many people can you feed bread and fish every day before it becomes impractical? How many sick people can you heal before it becomes impractical? They would not assume the responsibility of their own initiative to accept their true identity. And then in the end, you will be stoned or rejected by them. So to teach them to understand what they are is to be a living model of acting what you say. And from that standpoint, all great teachers are models of it, or examples of living what they say. So that is the need of no teacher. To live what you say doesn't require a teacher. Then maybe in the early stages of your growth, you are a passenger in a car and can't assume responsibility for your lifestyle until you learn how to drive the car. And after you learn how to drive the car, you may be given a key to your own car, and then you can drive through the cosmos. So that approach is waiting us. It's called the path of the initiate, where the individual assumes responsibility for his own life and learns the rules of conscious awareness and frees himself from ignorance. That is part known as standing on your own 2 feet. So I teach yoga posture. The only type is called Mahasana. And to see it, it's very simple. I have nothing else to offer you but to stand on your 2 feet and get up and live. So if you do it, you're a free person, Lord of yourself. Because all that is here is service unto who? My brothers and sisters.